news, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 182 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, talking to Micah Rice. Knew Micah from years ago when he was the vice president of national events at USA Cycling and had his hands in everything from Louisville Worlds to all of the cyclocross nationals from Bend, Oregon, all the way up until Hartford, I believe. And we get into a lot of stories from back in the day from that world in Louisville, and also a lot of these cyclocross national championships, similar to what we did with Brad Soner and Tim Johnson in the last two episodes, almost like the end of the trilogy here for talking to people from that time frame. Currently, Micah is a vice president with Sports Strategies, and we get into a little bit of what he does with that company. Part of that also, he's the executive director of the Pikes Peak Apex, which is a mountain bike race in Colorado Springs that'll happen in October. We'll get into all of that with Micah, and we will do it in just a minute after I tell you about our one sponsor of this show, which is Works Tools. If you go to yourcleanbike.com, enter the code GEARUP, you are going to get 15% off anything on that page, including the Works Hydra Shot, which is a portable washer cleaner, and also a ton of other stuff. The clamping jaw horse, the Sidekick portable work table, Pegasus multifunction work table, really amazing tools from Works. Go check it all out. Stock up, 15% off of anything on that page at yourcleanbike.com. Enter the code GEARUP. Also, head over to wideanglepodium.com. We are just loading up that page, that new page. We got a new website. Go check it out. We're loading it up with new content every day. Stuff from the Green Room. Slow Ride Podcast has one of my favorite episodes they've ever put out. Go check out that. Joan Haskam, who we talk about on this episode, is on the gravel lot. So go listen to her show and everything else. Grodeo, Great Mid-South show for Grodeo. Also, Rob Kelly from No Training Wheels has a new episode up about the effect of the COVID-19 on racing. That one's worth checking out as well. Get it all, wideanglepodium.com. All right, let's get into it with Micah. It's a great conversation, and we're going to do that right now. All right, Micah Rice, thanks for joining me here on Cyclocross Radio. Before we even get into it, I would be remiss. My podcasting partners, mainly at the Slow Ride Podcast, would be very upset with me if I did not start this interview off or this conversation off without an update from you about the parking lot at the Biltmore.
The parking lot at the Biltmore. Wow. You're going to throw me back right to Asheville.
As far as those guys are concerned, it's still an issue, and there's still people there waiting for shuttle buses.
Yep. Well, as far as I know, those people are still waiting, and the proper parking lots have not been constructed until... have you heard about the UCI World Championships at the Biltmore in 2030?
I have now, and I'm going to be shouting that from the mountaintops.
Okay. Well, just keep it on the down low.
Okay, I won't let anybody know.
But I think they're going to be built properly and have proper shuttles at that time.
Okay, good to know. So so Nationals was more just like a tester event.
Yeah, no, it's just a dry run. Yeah.
Hey, Micah, how you doing?
I'm good, Bill. Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm flattered for the ask.
Oh, absolutely. I know we talked, it had to be like years ago at this point, back when you were actually still with USA Cycling, I believe.
Yeah, it's been a few years, but those are a good 8 years at USA Cycling. I figured that was a pretty good pull.
Yeah, for sure. That was I didn't realize it was that long of a run. That's nice. And now I kind of just want to jump right into what you're doing now. Sports Strategies. Can you give me a rundown on what that is and what you all do?
Yeah, it's a small group. It's actually a company based out of Birmingham. And Sports Strategies is essentially a sports tourism consulting company. They do a number of different things, but the main core work is going into communities and kind of assess their sports tourism assets and then make recommendations, whether that be marketing or otherwise, about how to best leverage those to create economic development, economic impact, that sort of thing. I was brought on board mainly for event development. So often in these assessments and recommendations, sports strategies will recommend creating an event or bringing an event into town to show off some certain assets, whether that be, wow, you've got a lot of soccer fields. Let's see if we can turn this into a lacrosse tournament and utilize this a little bit more or something like that. But I kind of have brought my event development skills for kind of outdoor endurance events. So we can take a look at, you know, if there are waterways that could be utilized for an event or a trail system that could be utilized, something like that. Maybe there's some great dirt roads or paved roads that we can use for a cycling event, running event, whatever that might be. And then work with the community to try to build those. We don't do a lot of trying to attract events in. What we try to do is actually build a locally owned event for that community, whether that be an owner as a nonprofit or whether that be the city itself owns it, so that that event will always be there. You know, it's not like, well, if you stop paying the yearly fee and it goes to somewhere else, but actually locally built and owned. So I'm working on a number of different events around the country. We've got, you know, a big one here is the Pikes Peak Apex, which is a big one here in Colorado Springs. The owner is actually the Pikes Peak Outdoor Recreation Alliance. It's a nonprofit here, but working with a bunch of people from the city to create this 4-day mountain bike event. But we've got events that we're working on just outside of Phoenix, one just outside of Birmingham. There's one in the state of Georgia. So there's a lot of different ones that we're working with, and it's kind of been fun to be part of the team and look at be able to kind of keep my foot in cycling, but still kind of enjoy looking at this sports tourism side of things. It kind of opens my eyes a little bit to the economic development piece, and it's been fun.
Yeah. What intrigues me about that is when I look at cyclocross and we're always scrambling for how do we find sponsors? How do we pay for this? How do we do this from event to event? And then last year was the first year that I was not in Europe with World Cup stuff and was at domestic mountain bike races and going to all the Epic Rides races and seeing, especially with those, and there are some cyclocross races out there, but those, it's like Grand Junction. They want that race there. They want to bring people in. And it was such a, you know, it was all these visitor bureaus. I know even with like Pan Am Cyclocross, that was the visitor bureau up in Midland, Ontario that wanted that race there and that they were sort of bringing in all of those people. And it was such a, it seemed like such a great way to have the community not only engaged in the event, but wanting you and then also, you know, sponsoring it and having money available to make it
right.
work, which is just something that, right. you know, we come from, and you dealt with this, you know, with your time at USA Cycling, we come from a world that, well, you're very aware of that. Sometimes they don't want you there.
Very true. You have to, you know, that's one of the things that has been interesting to kind of look at and kind of look at those communities that do want you versus the ones that don't. And it's real easy to say, hey, I really would love to put on an amazing cyclocross race in downtown Chicago on the rear, on the lakefront. And that's a great idea. Fact is that probably a smaller town would embrace that and actually pay you to come to their town instead. And that's something that I learned pretty quickly. USA Cycling was part of the National Association of Sports Commissions for probably 7 years and got to, you know, a lot of relationships within that sports commission and CVB world. And it is a different world and they think completely differently. And then over the summer, I went to a conference that was an economic development conference. And that was a totally different thing. They weren't thinking sports. They were just thinking purely numbers, economic development, people that work for the city. But interesting thing is that they're all kind of pulling in the same direction. And if you can lay out a good plan and a good reason why they should invite events into their city, and it makes sense numbers wise, they have money to spend to help you do that. So it's been interesting to see all the parts come together.
So let's say if I want to do that, let's say if I want to have like a, even a smaller, even like a C2 UCI race somewhere, what advice would you give to me when sort of searching for a place or even in my own community to try to get that backing?
Sure. Well, there's two things to look at, and different groups look at it differently. So you need to make sure that you're speaking to a number of different groups within that city. A lot of people know to go to their Convention and Visitors Bureau. You know, their job is to bring people in from out of town. They're looking at, you know, we've all heard the term heads in beds. They're looking at the economic impact that people from out of town bring in. But then if you also start talking to people, for example, the chamber, we have a chamber in EDC here, it's economic development here with the city. We have kind of a sports, it's not a sports commission, but the sports core. They're really focused on nonprofit sports here in town. We've got the Pikes Peak Outdoor Recreation Alliance, which, you know, is helping us out with the Pikes Peak Apex. All of these groups have different reasons why they want to shine a spotlight on their city. It's, yes, it's the heads in beds. It's the economic impact to the city of people coming from out of town. But they're also branding the city. It's marketing for the lifestyle that they want to show off with their city. And so you've got economic development people that are thinking, okay, I want to attract businesses into my community. To attract businesses, then that means those businesses are going to have to attract people to live here. What's going to attract people to want to move to my city? And often it's what is there to do besides work? Is there a thriving downtown community? Are there bars and restaurants? Are there trails? I love to run. I love to hike with my family. I love to ride my mountain bike. Are there places to do that? And so often an event that might highlight those mountain bike trails, for example, actually is a selling point for a city that, you know, is trying to brand themselves as a great place to move and live as somebody who might move their business here. So that's the other piece, I think, that that I'm learning more about, and not just the heads and beds part.
Yeah. So other than the heads and beds, what, as a race organizer, what is it that's going to be expected from me? What is it that I need? What are my deliverables back to these people who want to back my event?
Well, it's going to be the economic impact. And Even if that's a small thing, don't be afraid to show that off. You know, often the Convention and Visitor Bureau has their own calculators. And if you can say, listen, I think I can get, you know, whatever that might be. I've got 300 people that are going to come in. Half of them are going to spend a minimum of one night in town. They're going to eat at a restaurant. What does that look like? And you might say, well, it's going to be economic impact of $15,000. That's something. It depends on the size of your town. You know, again, if you're like talking to the city of Chicago, they might not care. But if you're talking to a small town that might only have 10,000 people that live there, if you can show that you can do that once or twice a year, then, you know, that's something. That's a start. They're also looking for marketing. Where are those people from? Where are they coming from? They're going to go back to their communities. They're going to talk about our community. What are they going to say about the event? Are they going to come back with their family and visit for another reason? And those people, where are they coming from and what are they doing? What's the demographic of those people? Are these people that, gosh, they're traveling in and they have three $8,000 bikes per person that they're going to come in with? Well, you know, often the answer is yes. Okay, so that's a certain demographic that city may or may not want. Also, how are you pushing out information? Have you talked to the newspaper, and are you going to have a photo that gets pushed out to everyone that gets that? Are you going to get some sort of regional or even national coverage on a website, on a news endemic news area? What does that look like? What can you show them? And it all, again, it all goes back to marketing them. Also, the other thing to think about is what other possible sponsors in town have the same interest in bringing those people into town, whether it be for economic development, whether that be for economic impact. Is there a construction company that, you know, if we start bringing businesses to town and more people start moving to town, is there going to be more need for building commercial buildings or residential homes? They might have an interest in trying to brand and raise the price of housing for some reason. Is there a nonprofit in town that will help you pull in the same direction that can give you some visibility? You know, all of these are things that might be valuable to that city, but also the other businesses that are in that city.
Yeah. That's great information. I can tell, I mean, even just anecdotally, after we had nationals in Asheville, I know that it may not even been the next year, but within the next 2 years, my family went there for my kid's spring break. You know, we went and rented a house and spent the week there. And I know a lot of other people from the DC area did the same, you know, and just with the Epic Rise, when I went to Grand Junction this year, I was like, holy cow, we got to come back here. Cause this is, you know, amazing place. So that's kind of that key that I'm like, okay, a lot of times you're like, does advertising work? Does any of this marketing work? And I think with that kind of stuff, you can actually see the results of it. I mean, I personally could see the results of it because these were places that I wanted to go and had firsthand knowledge of it.
And a lot of people know it, but if you have an event, just a little tip, and again, many of you are already doing it, but I'm just going to throw it out there again. At registration, have a short 5-question questionnaire that everybody has to fill out to get their number. And it asks, where are you from? How many nights are you in town? Have you purchased lodging? How many people have you brought with you that aren't racing bikes? If you just have that information and then you compile that afterwards, you have a very good snapshot that you can show the people in your cities. Like, listen, I brought this many people in. They spent this much time in town. They brought this many people on top of registration. And that goes back to showing off. It's very simple. It's very easy. You need one volunteer to help, and it's a great tool.
Yeah, I don't think that's obvious at all. And at least in the cyclocross world, because I don't know anybody who's actually doing this. That's a huge tip. And I think something that a race organizer
super
should definitely
easy.
Do.
Yeah, super easy, and gives you a chunk of information that your city is begging for, and you could use that as leverage.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit. I'm really intrigued by this new race that I think that you are kind of behind developing, the Pikes Peak Apex Mountain Bike. It's a stage race, right?
It is. It's 4 days. We are very lucky that, Colorado Springs is also the home of RockShox. All of the R&D happens here. And so even before we announced this event, RockShox jumped on board as our presenting sponsor, and they've been fantastic. So of course that brings the full force of SRAM behind us. And so that was super helpful right out of the gate. So when we announced the event, October 1st is when we announced it. We announced it with them. It is a 4-day stage race. It's an interesting combination. Okay. And this is a little bit of a test to see, but we've really combined some things that we love about mountain biking with some things that we love about gravel racing, and have kind of turned it into our own thing. So it's a mountain bike stage race, technically. It will be sanctioned through USA Cycling, who are helping support it here in town. But we're running it like a dirt fondo. It's a mass start. So all categories, start in one foul swoop. Men, women, pros, amateurs, age groups, everybody goes out and rolls out at the same time. And it's just good. You know, we got pretty wide roads to start with. Everything starts from downtown Colorado Springs. So you can stay in downtown Colorado Springs and you're 10 minutes from every start line all 4 days. It starts off with kind of a prologue in Palmer Park. And then it utilizes a number of dirt roads, jeep roads, as well as the single track kind of on the slopes of Pikes Peak to create these courses that I wouldn't call them necessarily Leadville easy, but they're much easier than something like Breck Epic, right? So not lots of burly single track. It's a lot of, you know, dirt road climbs, double track stuff, pretty smooth single track. There'll be some spots that are tough, but I've had a number of people come to me kind of knowing kind of the courses that we're looking at and even say, I think I'm going to do it on a gravel bike. I think I'm actually going to race a gravel bike, and we don't care. You can race whatever you want. You don't have to finish stage one to go to stage two. You don't have to finish. You just come back and you won't be placed in the GC, but you get to start the next day. It's no big deal. So the whole idea is that it's really inclusive. We've got aid stations every 8 to 12 miles, you know, similar to a gravel race where you can stop and fill up your bottle and hang out for a few minutes, jump back on your bike and continue on. And while there is a pretty substantial pro purse, it's a $50,000 pro purse, split evenly between the men and the women. So that's going to get the pros here, but we've really built it around the amateur rider and making sure that, you know, pretty generous cutoffs. And, you know, we're going to try to get everyone finished. Some of these people might take 7 hours for a couple of these stages, but it's really more built around supporting the amateur rider and making sure that they've got everything they want.
Yeah. And that truly, I think, is what, as you said, you're sort of building it, not only the terrain as a gravel race, but also sort of that ethos that, you know, it's, you can still have your pros who are going to be off the front, yet it's still something that everyone's going to enjoy. And that's kind of the thing that we've seen that we're kind of struggling with in cyclocross. And, you know, obviously you'd see it in road racing, that even in your own category, there's such a disparate, level of ability that, you know, you can be a cat three thrown into a pro race and you're going to be lapped, you know, within three laps in a cyclocross race. Sure. And it's not that fun, you know? So I think that's right. One of the reasons that we're seeing people kind of find these, other opportunities and other disciplines of racing. And this seems like an interesting sort of happy medium between that mountain bike and gravel space.
Yeah. We haven't seen a lot of people try to find the gray space in between gravel and mountain bikes. So this is, you know, we've seen a little bit with something as big as has been around as long as Leadville. For a stage race to be like this and be able to start, you know, the next day, whether you finish the previous day or not, and having those aid stations there for everybody, it'll be interesting to see how people embrace it, if it's a format that people like. They're all single loops, you know, kind of in the 40-ish mile range, except for the prologue, which is just going to be a 10-mile first day. But I think it's going to be really fun. And honestly, and you talk to some of the people that live in this area, you know, you mentioned Russell Finsterwald, who obviously, you know, has lived here all his life. And he's so excited because he gets to show everybody the single track that he's, you know, been training on and riding forever. And there's some really fun stuff up on Pikes Peak that no one really knows about. Colorado Springs is not known as a destination for mountain biking. So it's pretty exciting. And kind of the wild thing was when we started looking at building this, how many bike races do you think happen in this town? It's Colorado Springs. We have almost 500,000 people in this area. It's the home of USA Cycling and home of the Olympic Training Center. How many bike races do you think happened in 2019?
I don't know. I heard there was a lot of drama around the Nationals races, but other than that, I really can't think of any.
I mean, outside of Masters Road Nats, zero.
Right.
Zero. No mountain bike races, no gravel races, no cyclocross races, no road races. Just nationals that happened on the Air Force. But there wasn't drama. I wasn't around. I drove a car in the road race. I drove a sweet vehicle, said I'd volunteer some time, but I avoided all that.
That's smart. I do want to, I will say, so one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, one, I just want to catch up because we haven't talked in years, but also I'd been talking with, I talked to Brad Soner, I talked to Tim Johnson, and it sort of was that generation. We were talking about cyclocross nationals, a lot of the broadcast stuff, and that was kind of the generation that you were there as well. But before we get to that, I did the other thing that I said before we talked. I was like, hey, I sort of been talking with these guys, and I really, think that there are a lot of people doing a lot of great reporting on the situation that we're in right now with COVID-19. And mm-hmm. especially, there's a lot of discussion over racing. We just heard about the Olympics, getting pushed back to 2021 today. So I didn't want to fail the other way in that people are thinking that we're completely ignoring that and aren't cognizant that we are in just this really hard times right now. I don't want to belabor that point, but I also want to acknowledge that we're not just like brushing over it and thinking everything is rosy in the world. We, understand that situation, but I still just wanted to give people an opportunity to have a conversation that maybe didn't touch on all of those subjects. All of that being said, just, your race is in October and hopefully we're all up and racing now, but we kind of talked about it a little before we started recording that may be a really crazy time now with hopefully we're starting to get back to a more normal life. I don't know where we'll be, but if that's the case, a lot of these races that have been postponed are going to start ramping up in this time period. I mean, what does that look like for you, for just from a race organization point?
And speaking just as the executive director of the Pikes Peak Apex and not any of the other projects that we've got going on at Sports Strategies, we don't really know, right? It's a big question mark and everyone is kind of trying to figure this out. I think literally, was it this morning or yesterday where they officially said the Olympics were
it was just today.
Postponed? Yeah, today. And so what does that do? We've heard of, some of the Epic Rides events, they've postponed Whiskey 50, but haven't picked a date for it.
Right.
They postponed Sea Otter and they dropped it right the weekend after us. We're actually last weekend in September. They're the first weekend in October. So I was like, whew, okay, we missed that big old rock missed us as they're just dropping in stuff. We don't know if they're going to, we put our weekend the weekend after the last European World Cup on mountain bike, just so we could try to bring in, like a Kate Courtney or some of the people that might have gone to the Tokyo Olympics was our thought process then. Obviously, all of that is just completely out the window and everyone's going to kind of wait to see where everything lands. But, it's going to get crowded. They might be running the Giro on top of us. We don't really know what's going to happen. There might be a World Cup dropped on there. Whiskey 50 might decide that's their only weekend. But we're going to run an event if we are allowed. Obviously we're working with the city. We're working with Parks and Rec. I literally found out yesterday that the Forest Service just approved all of our routes. That was an 18-month process.
Yeah, I'm sure.
To get the Forest Service to sign off. But everyone's just going to kind of look to, the state and the city and figure out, what we can do. I mean, obviously it's our hope that we're all racing bikes by the time we hit the fall. But we really don't know. So it's a little bit of a wait and see. And all we can do is continue to take the right steps to get our permitting in place and to get all of our people and equipment. People aren't really registering for the event right now. Registration slowed pretty quickly starting the end of February. But we, we're fortunately in a situation where a lot of the event is being funded by grants and some a lodging tax and some other things that we've got, a tourism grant through the state. A lot of that money has been spent, and we probably won't have to pay it back, which is key. And so even if we have to cancel the event, we'll be able to refund everybody all of their entry fees back, which I feel pretty lucky because not all events can do that. That's a really difficult thing, especially people that had to cancel an event that might have been in April. 80% of those entry fees are probably spent. So we're kind of lucky in the fact that we have other funding mechanisms and we'll be able to take care of those riders. But I think everybody's in a tough spot. I feel lucky that we've got a late date.
Yeah, for sure. I actually was in that same position, but also lucky enough that I had backing from other partners for the garage race series that I had that I put on. Yeah. That, you know, we just basically we were lucky enough that we were able to say, okay, we're going to postpone this. At the same time, I'm giving everybody their money back, and it's at such a smaller level to start with than all of these huge events that I couldn't even imagine having to go through that. It's just no fun at all.
And I hopefully we're racing by August because I got a spot at the Steamboat Gravel Race and I want to race it.
Oh yeah.
My goal is just like if I could do the Steamboat Gravel Race, then we're going to be fine 7 weeks later. So I just want to I want those guys to run their event.
No lead boat.
No lead. I couldn't get in that.
No, the lead boat. You know what a lead boat is.
It's a boo boat. Yeah, Leadville, and then the next day is Steamboat, right? Or is it flipped? One of those.
It's insane. Whatever it is, it's insane.
I'm not that good.
Yeah.
I don't have enough time to train for something like that
anymore. I still want my. I mean, if for as insane as that is, I want them since Breck Epic is that week before. I want somebody to be able to do like the first 4 days of Breck Epic, jump over, do Leadville, and then do Steamboat Gravel.
It can be done. They split their Breck Epic splits theirs up into 3 and 3, so you can actually do like the
first three
Epicurious or something like that they call it, and then do that first three. Maybe you get a rest day, then you jump in Leadville. I think there's some people that could do it.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are people that could do it. Absolutely. So for some of my listeners who maybe haven't been following cyclocross through the generations, you were at USA Cycling for some monumental moments in cyclocross.
Yes, indeed. You know, and it was funny because I came to USA Cycling in 2009. And I didn't know a lot about cyclocross. I actually had jumped into a cyclocross race in the mid 90s. I had my mountain bike and I was like, oh, this will be fun. And it wasn't. I broke my finger, I think, at a crash I had. And I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. And then I, as many people know, I ran a couple of professional road teams.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You came from the road side of it.
Yeah. And I had a number of mountain bikers and cyclocross racers that raced for me.
Did Powers race years. For you when you were
that was Deli Belly.
Yeah,
he raced for Deli Belly, but Tim Johnson did.
Okay, Tim Johnson did. Right, I knew one of those guys.
Raced for Jittery Joe's,
right.
And then Jeff Kabush was on that team, and Johnny Sunt was on that team.
Nice.
And then I had a women's team sponsored by Aaron's Corporate Furnishings, and like Meredith Miller was on that team. So I had riders that did cyclocross in the off season. And, you know, I always, you know, even though they were under a road contract, I said, yeah, whatever you want to do is get a separate sponsor and do the cross season. And I would, you know, check it out. But when I came to USA Cycling, I didn't really understand a lot about it, but over the years at USA Cycling, it absolutely became my favorite national championship of the year. I mean, how could it not? Right.
Yeah, for sure. I think you know, it may not be like the biggest discipline out there, but when it comes to nationals, I've been to every discipline. I don't think anybody can touch it. You know, maybe when they had the actual, you know, back in the Georgia days of nationals or even Philadelphia, maybe for road, But after that kind of went away, it seemed like cyclocross was top of the mountain.
Yeah, so I was able to come in 09. It was December of 09 was my first jump into cyclocross nationals, and I had just come there in August of 09, so I didn't have a lot to do with planning for it. Kelly Lusk was the national events director at that time who planned that. But I just got thrown right in. It was Bend, Oregon. Who doesn't love Bend, Oregon? Brad Ross running the show out there. And I was just like, holy crap, what is this? This is great. And we had, we had nationals there twice, and then we moved to Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah. And this was back when there was 2-year contracts for all of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was 2-year contracts, and, actually those Bend events were the first year that, cyclocross nationals wasn't privatized, where USA Cycling collected the entry fees and kind of ran the whole show. The year before that in Kansas, USA Cycling would just contract with a race director and say, hey, you keep all the entry fees and run the show and we'll be there to give out medals.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the things that I was asked to do when I came aboard, was actually pull back all of those events that really weren't fully owned and operated by USA Cycling. Pro Crit was another one. It was in Downers Grove. And again, USA Cycling just kind of showed up with a backdrop and medals. But it was really, Downers Grove was Downers Grove. It was his own thing and its own race director that ran it, collected all the entry fees, sold all the sponsors. And at the same time, USA Cycling brought in a company that sold sponsors, and those were, they did really good to start with. That was back when Volkswagen came on board and United Healthcare came on board. And, do I dare say the word Exergy came on board during that time. Great Nuts was another one. And all these were really strong, six figure sponsors for USA Cycling. And that's how we were able to kind of, pull all those in and create that brand across the entire, USA Cycling National Championships, portfolio. And so, that was kind of what I was asked to do and bring those in. And then, so things kind of went from there.
And then you also were involved talking, you brought up Exergy with the whole, I've heard the stories from Greg with the Louisville Sports Commission about the whole world's, story, but you kind of were in the middle of that storm. I mean, what everybody remembers from cyclocross worlds in Louisville is the condensed schedule, the flooding, the racing against the river, moving everything to Saturday, getting all the races in one day. That's what people remember. But I still think that there is a book to be written about everything that happened before that.
Yeah, no, and we had heard about this. Again, long story, but UCI made a deal to run world championships in Louisville directly with Bruce and Joan at USGP.
For sure.
USA Cycling was not involved in helping out and making that deal. And a number of things, and Joan's probably a better person to tell that part of the story on how a number of things fell through. And obviously we just spoke about Exergy sales weren't quite going as well. And there was a point where Bruce and Joan just didn't think they could pull it off. And Bruce was like, I can't do this and not, I could lose my house if I move forward. I'm just going to send it back to Belgium. And so at that point, I remember Steve Johnson came down. I was the VP of National Events. Actually, I was technically National Events Director. I was overseeing the events department. And I remember Steve saying, okay, You wanna do this? Do you think we should, USA Cycling should take this over? And I was like, yeah, we have to. We're not gonna send this back to Europe. That is a terrible idea. He obviously agreed. We can't do that just for the cyclocross community of the US. We have to keep this in the US. We are 9 weeks out from the event. 9 weeks. And Steve said, well, you know that if we take this on, guess who's taking it on? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you better just tell your wife now you're spending Christmas in the next 9 weeks in Louisville, Kentucky. I was like, okay, it's on. And so at that point, we kind of, you know, we worked through the details with everybody, but USA Cycling kind of came in. And USA Cycling came in, obviously, with the money that could back it. I don't want to take anything away from Bruce and Joan. I mean, they did a ton of work the previous 2 years to get everything in place and plan for this. And Joan, when I got there, she was living in Louisville, and she just really plowed forward the entire time. So I think it's only fair to make sure that it wasn't necessarily all just USA Cycling, you know, coming in on their horse and saving the day. There was a lot of work done by Bruce and Joan, and especially Joan on site, to make sure that we pulled this off, as well as the Louisville Sports Commission, Greg Fonte and those guys over there, Carl Schmidt. But it was a big, really hard pull that last little bit. And just when we thought we were going to get there to pull it off, down comes the rain and the river starts to rise. So that's the next chapter there. But just getting to that point, we are all just so completely blown that we are already just in a mode of let's figure it out. And it turned out to be probably one of the best single day world championships ever, because it's probably the only single day world championships ever.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was such a great day. And it was, you know, you talk about the flooding and just the, and I've talked to Greg about it, just the engineering feat that was happening down by the river with the pumping and the sandbags and everything. And it was just like, I think Sven crossed the line to take the win. And then they was already like coming over the top at that point.
It was pretty unbelievable timing. And I mean, talk about coming together. That Parks and Rec director, Marty,
yeah,
and the Army Corps of Engineers that came in and built that dam with the sandbags, and the Sports Commission pulling everything off, and the mayor's down there cracking whip. I mean, it was, woo, talk about a team effort. That's that definitely goes down as a. It was so hard during the time, but I definitely look back at it as one of those, honestly, highlights of my career right there. So I'm pretty happy with how it all turned out in the end.
Yeah, the job that you all did was amazing, and then just that infrastructure that they have there between the mayor and the parks department, and then also the Louisville Sports Commission, is just, man, I just it kind of makes me sad that they're hopefully, I'm going to say, just taking a break from yeah, cyclocross, and we'll get back in there one day. So where we had Nationals 2018, Joe Creason Park, that was the backup. I mean, you couldn't have moved there. It was a bit possible, but that was the second site you were looking at, right?
Correct. That was the next option, but we got word about the river rising so late.
Right.
We were like, there is no way this infrastructure is moving. So we've got to come up with a different plan. There was no way, as you know, just like literally a mile down the road, we had a entire course that was
right, the Masters,
set up for Masters Worlds, and we ran races there all week. And but it wasn't
the same. That course. Yeah. I'm so glad they were able to do it, because it was such a great day, and the conditions were so bad that they were perfect for those pro races because it gave those guys the challenge that they would have had at any Belgian course. And I'm not sure that Eva Bandeman Park provides that on any other day.
Yeah, no, it worked out really well. And Joe Creason's really good. I mean, that's a great park. I think that really provided a great course. I think you could argue that in terms of its structure and bones, it's even better than Eva Bandeman.
Well,
I think
I'll tell you this, that what that was, because Pan Am's was there in 2017 and then 2008. I guess so confused since they did the doubles, but yeah.
17.
And then 2018 was Nationals there. It is such a exhibit A for why you need a test event, because the Pan Am race was fine, but so many lessons were learned from the setup of that race that was really spread out compared to what we eventually had for the Nationals track with the finish line, you know, in this sort of remote area. And that was all moved into that bowl, and everything was just really just sort of squeezed into this one area that changed the whole makeup of that event. Yeah. And it became, and then, you know, there was criticism over the grounds and the weather and everything else, and that's a whole different story. But as far as that track goes, and just what we saw for racing was, I thought it was one of my favorite setups, how that ended up going on.
It was a good setup. I wasn't there. I obviously watched the live feed, but I was still at USA Cycling when we announced Louisville. I did the original walkthrough with Keegan, who, how good is that guy at cross courses?
Just course after course, yeah.
Yeah, so I worked with him many, many years over stuff like that. But having him, obviously, I come in there and I got a great idea, and then he just like, no, Michael, we got it. I was like, all right. That's why you hire people that are much better than you at those things. We announced that, and then I think not too long after that, I promptly left. So it was fun to watch that. And then Tacoma was able to watch that. And that was the last cyclocross venue that I chose during my time.
Okay. Interesting.
At USA Cycling.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's right. Cause it was those three that were, it was that group of three, right?
Yeah. We ended up announcing two, just Louisville and Tacoma.
Okay.
And so we did a fairly wide net and had, I think, six finalists, and it included Bentonville. I remember that was in the mix. And I'd have to go back and look, but we ended up picking 2 years, single awards. But that was that Lakewood course. And we walked that for a day with the folks from, Tacoma Sports Commission, and really liked the idea of trying to get back to the Northwest. So that was my last pick. So I was able to watch that this year and be like, okay, my legacy is over. It's all Terra now. So,
well, it was a good legacy. And part of that legacy, you know, and this was something that I was chatting with Brad and also Tim about, was just the evolution of the live stream and the production behind that. And I know that that sort of came under your purview as well, as we're sort of building that out. You know, I guess from, I don't know, Austin, right? Austin was the one that, like, that was behind the barriers kind of contracted that one. Is that right?
It was actually behind the barriers, and it was actually a pretty good one.
They did a good job.
Yeah. If you go a year earlier is really when we tried to start doing a better show up in Wisconsin.
Yep.
And again, not a lot of people know this. I've said this before, but, usually cyclocross nationals, just in terms of how much it costs, about breaks even,
right?
Except you're out the live stream. There's almost no way to offset that cost, and so we knew that we were breaking even essentially on these events. And I said, we got to do something with a live stream. And I think I begged like $12,000 out of the budget, and that's when we kind of started saying, okay, what can we do for 12 grand. And we kind of did a little setup and four cameras. And then that's kind of how it started. And then it was like, okay, how about 18 grand? Okay. How about, what can we do for 18 grand? And then it kind of, so I did that.
I liked the 12 grand one because then I had the only footage of like the backside of that Wisconsin course. And people were like, oh, we didn't know what that staircase looked like.
That was a good one. Yeah. I'm getting off topic, but I actually, one of my favorite memories of you is actually in Hartford when for the second time, the live stream goes down and I'm like, Bill, you got to go out and get some coverage. And you just like, I remember you looking at me and picking up your gimbal and running out of the truck and like, yeah, I'm going to go get some footage. It's like one of my favorite, memories of you, but, yeah, I mean, you would cover those holes and we'd try to get those things covered. And it's like, can we show this later? Can we work it into the show later? But, I could go round and round about coverage versus that, but it slowly grew. And I was really excited to see Tacoma and Lakewood this year with a real budget. And that just slowly grew.
I think Lindsay was telling us it was either, somewhere between 70 and 80 grand for that show.
Yeah, I could never have gotten that much during my days there. But we all knew that, cyclocross and the media and marketing to come out of that was kind of a lost leader for the national championship brand because everyone would watch it. I mean, it got more views than any national championship, including Pro Road. And you've got a little bit of a captive audience in the winter, people that are really looking for content, but people really would all watch that. It's like, well, this is really a big ad for USA Cycling National Championships. And then you're like, that looks awesome. I'm going to go do a national championship this coming season. So we figured it was money well spent and everyone kind of agreed with that. So during the last part of my time at USA Cycling and it continued after I left, fortunately, is that those live streams just started getting better and better and better. And I'm in agreement with you guys that this year's stream was better than anything during my time, but I'm proud to help kind of lay that groundwork to get there. But it was really well done.
Both Tim and Brad both, I think, had memorable stories from Asheville.
Yes. Yeah. Asheville is, that was when I said, well, we've got these two bids that we can go this direction or this direction. And I don't know what battles I was fighting with the people that control the money strings, but it went the wrong way on which bid we are going to accept and how much it cost. And I actually heard the Brad and Tim. I actually heard both of the podcasts and heard them talk about the guy up on who had the huge camera on top of the scissor lift, who was the artistic cameraman. Right. And we had a lot of jokes about that guy. And then we lost the entire run up on the far side too.
Yeah, wasn't there a cable that was like sliced or something up there? I remember that happening. That thing went out.
Yeah, we had one camera that really covered. Honestly, it was probably 30% of the course on the far side, and it was one camera and a cord, a cable got cut and there was no time to replace it. We didn't have another one that long, and that camera got pulled all like way far back in, and
right.
It's like, well, we just lost that whole section. But that's what happens when you cut corners. And we were obviously able to say, well, we're not doing that again, and came back better next year. And that's one of those things that probably just had to happen to let everyone realize, you guys can't, don't keep trying to save money in this spot. This is important.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's even, you look at that, the what you got out of Hartford is truly amazing for what happened. And I know, yeah, you and I, I think I was walking with you up there, like after everything started to get back up. And that's when the, I think I was with you when we learned that the generator wouldn't start.
Oh, that was a brutal morning.
Yeah.
That was a brutal morning. But I mean, if we had done that weekend on a budget, there would have been no show.
Right.
I mean, what Chris Lincoln pulled off with what had happened to our infrastructure is actually pretty amazing. And the fact that we actually had spent, I think that year was probably in the range of like 30, 35 grand, which was a bigger budget than we had ever had before. If we had, you know, tried to do the 15 to 18K deal on Hartford, and yeah, it would have been like one camera with Kelly Felke on it in the back of the thing with a shot of Tim Johnson talking once in a while, and that would have been the entire show.
I'm telling you, Kelly, when he got up there, and it was like this move, which I just wish I would have had on camera, because he was like, he like lit up when he saw that camera, no behind him, turned his baseball cap backwards.
hats off to Kelly for sure on that. But he was, and again, not to get into Kelly, but Kelly is such a fan of the sport, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he is someone that works, you know, worked with me at USA Cycling, obviously a super pro at what he did, but he, in the end, he's a fan of the sport, and he couldn't believe that he had the opportunity to jump in and run this camera, you know, for a national championship live stream. And it was just like a little fun opportunity for him. So, I mean, there's a lot of people at USA Cycling that are like that, are just huge fans of the sport, and they get stuck in another spot because it's all hands on deck. And that was his. So kind of
yeah.
Cool.
Other than the worlds coming to the U.S. Any top memories from your time there in USA Cycling? Anything that really sticks out, either just proud or just even another funny story from your time? And I know it just wasn't cyclocross, so you know what, sort of across the board for the events that you were in charge of.
Yeah, no, it seems like all the good stories are out of cyclocross, though, for some reason. I think, you know, the Richmond worlds were a real highlight for a lot of people. I mean, I didn't have a lot to do with that event. That was really a medalist show, and we all know medalist does a fantastic job with that stuff. But I was kind of in charge of Libby Hill area. And so, you know, we brought our stage there, and we had Dave Toll on the stage announcing and that to the crowd on that section. And then we kind of created a special USA Cycling area with some donors that were helping out, you know, the junior development squad with, you know, through the development organization that we were kind of trying to take care of. And so we had just a massive party on Libby Hill, and it's not a lot of chances that I got to go during my time at USA Cycling just to a really great bike race and just sit there and enjoy it. You know, I was always running around or in charge of something, or someone's on me, or I'm driving a car, or, you know, whatever that might be. You know, if I ever went to something like Tour of California or Tour of Utah, I was always doing, even there, I was doing something. I was like, okay, you go drive a comm car or, you know, whatever. But I really got some time just to sit on Libby Hill in the crowd and be like, you know, we just brought the Road World Championships to the United States. And that was a pretty great moment, I think, for everybody. And I was excited to be part of that. That was kind of cool.
I grew up in Richmond, and being able to, I was in the same boat. I mean, I, you know, had my media credentials, had everything there, but I didn't have any clients. I was just like, I'm going to do this. Went down there, went with my wife. We dropped our kids off at my parents' house and then got like an Airbnb and just had our bikes. And even though it was like raining for a couple of those days, it was that event that has to be, of all the UCI events that I've covered, that's definitely in the top three. That was such an amazing weekend. Such a great time.
It was, and it was really a chance for, I think, for the U.S. to kind of be like, hey, guess what? We could do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just Europe who can bring out the crowds and can create a good course and, you know, you don't have to have a city like, you know, Copenhagen or Paris or something. It's like, we can run a world championship that's going to get as many spectators and be as exciting as anything you're going to throw up in Europe. So there.
Yeah. Well, and the hilarious thing is that, you know, growing up, I went to college there, but also high school, and just like all me and my friends, you know, this is 80s, riding around on our bikes in Richmond, and all the stuff that made that event just amazing. And seeing it later, I'm like, oh yeah, it was all the stuff we absolutely hated, riding our bikes down Monument Avenue with all those damn cobbles, you know, going down to Shaco Bottom with those huge climbs. We're like, this stinks. Yeah. We don't want to come to this part of the downtown Libby Hill. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, this is what made this really incredible.
Yeah. No, it was good. And we had a great winner, obviously, with Sagan winning the men's race. And that, you know, people loved that. But,
you know, even just going back with like, Chloe Dygard and Emma White in the
I was going to say, we winning race. Races, yeah. Right?
It was like the coming out party for these just gods of U.S. cycling right now.
Yeah. No, that was a good start. And, you know, people sometimes underestimate what hosting an event like that does to the entire cycling community in that nation. I think that, you know, having our women go and win world championship gold medals, you know, in Richmond, that was a start of that happening for years after. And it just completely raised the bar for our athletes on what can be accomplished at a world championship. We'd gotten in there and, you know, won a world championship every once in a while, but we've gotten so many podiums since then. I think it's really kind of changed the attitude of what can be done by the U.S. team. And that's one of those things that an event like that can do that you don't think about.
Yeah, and even having those events, I think having Louisville Worlds opened it up for people to think, oh, it's not crazy for us to have World Cups every year in cyclocross here. It's not crazy that we're getting Worlds again. You know, these things all seem like in the realm of possibility, where there it just seemed like this is just this pipe dream that's actually coming to fruition. You know, and which was amazing. What I will say is that we're just about at an hour.
Whoa.
Yeah. And
you didn't even bring up Austin Cyclocross Nats. Well,
we touched on it for a second, but I don't what I was going to do. I actually, while we were talking, I will admit this, while we were talking, is I wanted to and I can't even find it now. I was going to find the website of that Heritage Tree Society, cuz I like to check in on them every once in a while, because for years after the event, they still, their last entry, and I think possibly only entry, was Cyclocross Nationals.
Well, I always get people send me photos. Literally twice a year, someone will go down to Zilker Park and send me photos of how great the trees are doing. And so I appreciate that everyone's got my back like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and... So here's one thing. Let's because there were reports of this happening, and just the craziness of it for people. I don't know if you don't know about Austin Nationals, where it was actually canceled and then uncanceled, and we had to. I actually didn't go. I was on a plane going home, so I missed. I missed.
Just Google it.
Yeah. Everything happened on Monday. So here's the story that I heard that I want some confirmation on, that the police were preparing basically for a riot, that they were coming in there, what I heard, with the jugs of milk, which would be the remedy for after they were tear gassing people.
Oh man, I had not heard that one.
You hadn't heard that. Okay.
I had not heard about the jugs of milk.
Yeah.
Now, when I got there to the course that morning, and I had a heads up as I was driving in, is police were actively removing people from the park.
Yeah.
But I didn't see anything that looked like anyone was like strapping up the riot gear or anything like that. I never saw anything outside of regularly dressed police officers that were starting to get a little strict with people.
Yeah, that's good to know, because when I heard that, I was like, for any constituency out there, if there was overkill, it's for skinny bike racers.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that. And I didn't even see that many police officers.
Yeah.
I mean, there was only a handful. I don't know of them expecting anything worse, but I do remember them telling Brad Soner that he better over the mic tell everybody to get out of the park. And Brad just basically saying, okay, that's it. Everybody out of the park. And he turned off the microphone and walked away. And that was the end of that day.
Yeah.
That's a long story, but
I think it's one that's been, that's why I didn't even want to get back into it, because I think
we
probably have talked about it in the past, and it's just kind of one of those things.
That was a low point. That was probably a low point at USA Cycling for me, and just being so bummed out. You know, not only was I the guy that hated trees, but I was the guy that, you know, screwed up that last day for cyclocross Nats and everything else. And so it was definitely a low point for me, and a time that I was just like, just super bummed, but absolutely no idea how we just got blindsided on that. Just no idea how we could have fixed that.
Right.
So
that's what I was joking about with this website and these folks that literally came out of the woodwork I think even by just a fluke, we're able to contact the right people to, you know, right or wrong, get the ear of somebody who made the call and made this all happen. It just seemed crazy.
I mean, and just knowing it, I mean, we literally did 4 walkthroughs with city arborists.
Right.
It's like, okay, how many cyclocross races do that in preparation for the cyclocross race? 4 walkthroughs with the city arborists to prepare just for making sure that we're taking good care of the park. And then to be, you know, kicked out from the tree folks was kind of rough.
See, it all that did is it made Asheville parking like a walk in the park for you.
A walk in the park. That's right.
Easy That's going. Right. Well, I don't know, Mike. Your time at USA Cycling, I always enjoyed working with you. And again, I hope that we are able to have these races coming up, and I'm not sure scheduling wise, but man, at least one of these times. I hope this thing goes on for years, and I'm able to make it out there, because this sounds like a great event that you got going on in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. Pikes Peak Apex should be a good time, and we're hoping that it lasts for a long time. The community really is embracing it, and I think it's an interesting combination of mountain bike stage racing and gravel racing. So we'll find out what happens.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for chatting.
Yeah, thanks for the time, Bill. Appreciate you having me on.